Hello and welcome to the Behind the Bra podcast, brought to you by Barbells for Boobs, where we believe in exceptional breast health care for all, and we strive to improve the quality of life post-diagnosis. I'm your host, Ziana Hansen, and the founder of this incredible organization. Thank you for joining us. Today, we have Miranda McKay, a breast cancer survivor, wife, daughter, yogi, and more recently, so bravely admitting to be an athlete. Welcome to the show, Miranda.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Great. I'm doing really good. Good.
So before we begin with my famous first question for us to dig into really who you are, I just want to have a disclaimer here, a little disclosure to the audience that we've met and we...
Yes.
So I want to kind of just really briefly kind of tell everyone how we met. It was because of COVID-19, why we met. And it was such an interesting weekend that you were supposed to come out to LA for the YSC Summit. And then you were out here from Michigan, right?
Yes. Yeah. From the Detroit area.
And then it was like canceled.
Yeah, it was all of a sudden we decided to come out a couple days early, make a long vacation out of the expo. It was our second expo. And so we decided to come out, and we were actually at, I don't remember the name of the place. It was like a Moroccan themed bar, and it was one of our favorite performers. We had just randomly found out was going to be performing and decided to go there. And I looked at my phone and saw Summit was canceled due to COVID. And I was so upset. I was so bummed because that was the whole reason we were out there. Like, we probably shouldn't have been spending the money with the budget on making this trip all the way across the country, but we did. And I thought about canceling it. I'm like, let's just go back home. Let's save the money. We should just go back home. We don't need to be out here the whole week, I said to my husband. And he's like, we need the vacation. We haven't had a vacation in like a year. And so I was like, okay, let's stay. And I'd hit up my friend Sandra, who she's amazing, and I could go on about her. And she's the one also that introduced me to Barbells for Boobs. But she's like, hold up, before you do any plans, let me hit up Z. They've got the headquarters are out there. But let me hit her up. Let me see what we can do. And that's basically how we connected. So it was just like right before the COVID craziness kind of hit and the whole world caught on fire. And I got to meet you and come out there.
Yeah, no, it was before kind of the stay-at-home orders. When was the conference? It was like March 8th.
It was like the first weekend of March.
And I remember the CEO or the kind of the mission officer of YSC contacted me, and she's like, hey Z, like you're in California, so you probably have your finger on the pulse. Like, what's it looking like out there? Like, should we shut down? And I'm like, dude, have the summit. Like, this is
at that time.
I was like, you're fine. Have the summit. Cause I know how important that summit is for our community. And so, and then I told Sandra, I was like, there's no way they're going to cancel it. I spoke with them today. I think that they're going to move forward with it. They canceled. So that was the first big thing in my life that canceled for COVID. And I was like, wait, what? Like, the YSC summit is closed, is canceled. So, but the lesson learned in it was you got to pick up a barbell for the first time in your life at our headquarters. So thank you, Sandra Zori, for that intro.
Yeah.
That was the disclaimer.
Yep. That's what helps me. I feel so much more at ease. I'm always nervous sharing my story. It doesn't matter. It's been almost 2 years since I finished chemo, but I still get nervous every time. It's like, I want to share. It's important to me. So I'm always wondering, you know, what does this person need to hear, and what do I want to say and get it in the right order? And it's kind of funny, but now I'm more relaxed because I got to meet you. So you're a real person to me.
I am real. I think that this is one thing I love about the podcast is I think all of the listeners every time I host a podcast, I learn something so different and I get a different perspective or a different lens on life. And so I think that whatever anyone is willing to hear that at that time in their life, you're, mm-hmm. they're, everyone has something they need to hear, right? And so just have confidence in your words tonight and know that you're going to be, that people are listening and you're going to help somebody tonight. So, or today or this morning, wherever you're at in your life, listening to this, it could be 20 years later. It could be your grandbabies that are listening to this, Miranda. So with that, we will start with, who are you? So take everybody to like, where were you born? Where did you come from? What kind of upbringing did you have? What kind of family? All the way up until kind of what your life looked like the day before your breast cancer diagnosis.
Brief snapshot.
And no, do it in like 3 minutes. Let's go. No.
Okay. All right. Where's my note cards? I have this prep. No, I'm kidding. No. Well, I am born, raised, still live in Michigan. I grew up in Saginaw, which is just like 2 hours from where I live now in the Detroit suburbs. And I've been here my whole, you know, my whole life. I love Michigan. There's so much to do here. I'm an outdoor girl. I love camping, kayaking, biking, hiking, all of that. My parents divorced when I was a pretty young age, and I grew up with me and my brother and my mom raising us most of the time with, just going to school, being outdoors. Come from a really huge family. I am one of, I think, right around 20 cousins on my mom's side. So huge family. And I just grew up loving outdoors, reading. I was never into anything athletic, like sports. I wasn't a big sports kid or anything like that. I played volleyball in grade school. I played, you know, soccer in the street with friends, but nothing too serious. I never considered myself an athlete by any means. I went to college for a few years, and then I met my now husband, Ian, and when I was in my early 20s, and moved down to the area I live in now, actually. And we dated for just a short while, lived together, went our separate ways, and we came back together about, 12 years ago now, and we got back together and started dating again. And so we've been together since then, and he is like my knight, my rock, he's my person in my world.
I've had the pleasure of meeting him and watching you two interact, and it felt like literally like teenage love, like they just started hanging out. But I want to hear more about that story, but I think it's like a whole other podcast show. So,
in February, you should do a series on relationships and backstories of survivors. I think that would be awesome.
Well, I know that we have a survivor in our community that divorced her husband, and then they have now remarried. So I'm sure we have some really fun Valentine's Day series shows.
I think so too.
Yeah. So, okay. So you guys get back together, mm-hmm. get married.
Yeah. We get back together. We're married. We're like living, you know, the typical American dream. Like we both have our careers. He's worked for a cable company for like, I actually helped him get the job. I found him the job ad back in like 2003 when we were dating the first time. So he's been with this company. He's got an amazing career with them. I've been doing my own career and life's good. You know, we've got the American dream. We own our house together. We've got our pets. And I actually was too much of a career person, and I was working, you know, a corporate high stress, high demand, answering my emails till 11 p.m. type crazy job. And I decided to quit that. It was like my stress level was insane. It was really bad. I was like, this job's killing me. I can't do this anymore. And so I quit that job, and I decided to work for a friend of the family's music school actually and help them build up their kind of company and their processes and things like that. And I decided to register for yoga teacher training because yoga had been my passion for years. It was what helped me work out that horrible career corporate stress. And so I enrolled in yoga teacher training.
That seems like such a big change. Did something happen? Was there some like aha moment that you had that made you just wake up and say, F corporate, and I'm going to become a yogi teacher and help this small business systemize their processes?
What helped me have my aha moment was actually, it was an audiobook I was listening to. It was Mel Robbins, The 5-Second Rule. Mm-hmm. And it was all about, you know, just like following those gut instincts and you have to just get up and react. And I had seen, it was this job posting for my family friend's school. And I was like, this is it, Miranda. This is what you can do. Here's your plan. You quit your job. Wow. You do this. We figure this out. Talk to Ian. Just figure this out so I can like live again. I was just working and it was sucking the soul out of me basically. And so that was just like my aha. It was a 5-second rule thing. It just made me snap and change. And
thanks, Mel Robbins.
Yeah, seriously, Mel Robbins, that book changed my life. It's crazy. I still use that rule. Like sometimes I'm just sitting there. I'm like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Just, you got a rocket ship, jump, go, push yourself off the couch, do whatever.
Wow. I have not read the book, but I've listened to, she was a guest on, Lewis.
Oh, Lewis House.
I think she was a guest on his show and I understood the concept of what the book was about. She was on that book tour. So she was like touring and talking about that book and her message from the podcast was really motivating and super for me, like to the point where I was like, oh, I'm gonna start following this woman, and it's on my list of books to read, but all my great writers that I love reading, they just keep coming out with new books. So she just keeps getting pushed down to the bottom.
Lower and lower.
Sorry, Mel.
Her YouTube.
Okay, so 5-second rule.
Yes, 5-second rule.
Change your life. Everyone, count from 5 down.
Yep, you're never going to be motivated. Right. Move your butt is basically it. Yeah, so I enrolled in yoga teacher training. I was like ready. I was excited. I had transitioned to another company helping them build their accounting system. So I was so excited. My life was like now officially on track. I had my first day of yoga teacher training and it's like boot camp, it's yoga boot camp for 8 hours. But so it was super intense. And then the next day I was in the shower and I found a lump and I was like, no, that can't be right. That's weird. I get out of the shower. I have Ian, my husband, check. Like, I don't know. I pulled the muscle. That's what it is. This muscle feels like a grape in my boob. And I was just like complete denial. No, no, no. And he was like, no, you should get it checked. I was like, well, I have my annual girly appointment coming up. I'll do it then. And he looks at me. He's like, that's like 2 months away. You need to call your general practitioner doctor. So fine, whatever, you know, first time I joke, the first time I listened to my husband, he saved my life, but he really, I was just going to put it off. It wasn't that big of a deal. And as soon as I went in, as soon as I told my GP about it, he does the physical exam. As soon as he touches it, I show him where it's at. His like face goes gray and the color drains out of his face. I'm like, oh, okay. That's not great. But he's like, okay, we're just going to get you in for, you know, a mammogram and an ultrasound. And it's probably nothing. It's probably just a cyst, but I want to double check it because, you know, you brought it up. So I give him credit because I know I was at the time only 35. So I figure I hear a lot of women saying, oh, they told me to come back in 6 months, you know, just wait and see. No big deal.
Yeah. Bless his soul for letting you be the advocate that day. So
And every time I've seen him since, I'm like, I'm just telling you, you're amazing because you listened to me that one time. And I just remind him every time, like, you probably don't hear it enough when you do listen and you do a good job. So I want to make sure you know.
You know, you're a good doctor.
You're doing a good thing for young women. And so I went in to, I scheduled the mammogram and ultrasound like maybe a week later. And I was terrified. I'm like, I'm so small boobed. Like, I can't imagine this like demon press. I was so scared. I asked my husband to come with me. He came with me from that point on every appointment, but it went in for the mammogram, had it done, went right over next for the ultrasound. Cause it was prescribed or whatever. So I'm laying there and the ultrasound woman is using the wand all over and doing that. And she's clicking her gum incessantly. And I just don't do well with repetitive noises. So that was driving me. I still remember that to this day. And so she's like, okay, I want to have the next up higher, like the actual doctor take a look at this. Mm-hmm. So that didn't make me feel good. So he comes in and he's looking and he's like, okay, just so you know, I see. He was telling me details, like the edges, whatever, were not right, and he wants to take a biopsy. So I say, yeah, sure, I'll sign off on that. And I'm waiting there forever with like my boob hanging out, it's cold, and I'm still waiting.
Yeah.
And it turned out they were trying to get authorization from my GP, but my GP, that was lunch hours at the time. So they were trying to get
authorization? Like, was it like more of a prior authorization for it so that it would be paid for by the insurance?
Not really, because I don't know if maybe the insurance required my GP to prescribe. I have no idea. I didn't know, but it sounded like for some reason my doctor, they wouldn't just do it without my doctors. So but thank goodness Ian came with me because they had to call. He had all my paperwork and stuff. So they had to call him out of the waiting room into the room with me. So he's looking at me terrified, knowing what's going on, and like it's escalated to a biopsy. And so finally they get the authorization, and the numbing stuff doesn't work that good on me, and that was a whole ordeal itself, and I was super traumatized after. But it was, I think 2 days later I get the phone call that it was my GP, and like he sounded like he was going to cry telling me that it's cancer. And I don't know why. I was like, so you mean it's malignant? I'm like, he just said cancer. Why do you have to hear the malignant word?
A different word.
I know. And I felt bad. Like, I was feeling bad for him. I was like, why are you feeling bad for him? You're the one with cancer.
Yeah.
And I was at home by myself because at that time I was working like part-time, and I was at home, and I was just crushed and distraught. And I tried to call my husband, but he was at work and I couldn't get a hold of him. And then I called my mom, and it was just like, it's still such a vivid memory of trying to go through that like initial processing. And I definitely didn't want to be alone doing it.
So going through this process, the time that it took from, you know, finding the lump all the way up into the biopsy, up to that phone call that you had from your GP, at any point in your gut, like we're talking about your gut response here, did you think that you had breast cancer?
I had like this little whisper, but I'm so anxious and anxiety prone that I was just like, no, that's your normal worry, Miranda. But I just had this little whisper, that's probably, but I never, like, breast cancer, I never would have thought breast cancer. I would have thought I've had, you know, other cancers in my family. I would have thought something else, never breast cancer. We didn't have that in my family. So I was just like in denial that it could possibly be it.
So you get this earth-shattering, I guess it's earth-shattering. So many women get this diagnosis, 1 in 8, you know? So you get this news, and at what point do you finally get to talk to your husband? And at what point do you guys get to have that conversation of what are the next steps and what does treatment look like? Like, I know that you had to become a student of breast cancer overnight. So kind of walk through those next really critical moments in your life sharing this with, you know, your loved ones?
Thankfully, I was able to get a hold of him maybe 15, 20 minutes later. It wasn't that long when you think about the minutes, but the feeling was, the feeling was a long time. But like, as soon as I told him, like, we didn't talk on the phone really. I just, you know, said my diagnosis, and he's like, I'm leaving work, I'm coming home. So it was, you know, 20, 30 minutes for him to get home. And then it was just crying. It wasn't even really much of anything. Like I knew I had I was then contacted by like a nurse navigator to set up my appointment for like orientation to breast cancer, basically day. I mean, they fed us lunch. It was great. But it was like, at first it was just that very, like, you're in the bottom of a pit kind of by yourself, and it's very isolating, and like, you don't know what to do. You want to reach out. Like, I wanted to reach out to my mom, but that's my mom. And I don't want to pull her down that far with me, is what I felt. Like, I wanted to put up my walls, and I wanted to guard myself because I felt like I would protect other people. But that was kind of the first mindset I changed when I, you know, got diagnosed, was not being able to ask for help or talk about, you know, what I'm going through. So that was something I had to change really quick.
Well, I feel like the silver lining in all of this is that you didn't have this stressful corporate job, and you had already made some critical changes in your life so that you could almost have a little bit more self-preservation during this time of treatment and healing. And like, I couldn't imagine if you were still in that place and then also getting this diagnosis. I don't think that it would have, I'm just curious what the outcome would have been, and how did your, like being in that corporate world, how do you feel they would have handled this diagnosis? Cause that's always the big thing, is how does your team that you know, your job that you work for, your husband that you live with and partner with and life with and your kids, like, it's more of how do they support you during this process? And that allows, I think, the woman to make sure that she can heal and recover well. So what was, from your husband's support, your family support, and the difference that would have been your corporate support versus the current kind of job you had set up for yourself at that time?
Yeah, my husband and I, we actually talk about that every so often. We sometimes say, you know, can you imagine if you were still working for that company when you got diagnosed? And I was like, it would not have been good. I would have pushed myself and just kept pushing myself like crazy to just get it done. And whereas alternatively, what happened is with my husband's support, I was able to, like, I did not work whatsoever during treatment. And I think that was the best thing for me, mostly mentally. Physically, I feel like maybe, most of what I did was office work. It was not physically hard, but it was mentally super draining what I had been doing. So I feel like that changed my experience a lot. And sometimes I feel guilty about it because, well, maybe, you know, maybe we could do things differently, or maybe we could have, you know, remodeled this part of our house if I had been working. It's, you know, silly things, the what ifs. It doesn't matter which way you kind of go, you'll always face the what ifs.
I think it's so funny that women don't put the value on our own sanity. like I'm just going to be straight up right now. I'm losing my mind with my son. I love him so dearly. He's so precious to the world. Love you, Cash. But he's been at home since March 13th. And I'm at this point right now where I'm like, I don't know how we're expected to be full-time workers, full-time parents, homeschool teachers, wives, you know, all these things.
How many boxes can we check?
Yeah. How many boxes can I check today? And I'm finally at this point where I'm like, okay, I need help. And it's July and I just turned 41 and it was like, okay, Z, you're not getting any younger. Like, it's, you just need to tell your husband you need help. And I don't know why we tend, as women, we tend to, everything else is more important than our own emotional, serenity. Like, I've been like in my head this whole time, like, oh my gosh, he can't be on Fortnite too long. Yep. But then I'm like, but I've got to take this meeting and I've got to do it. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, ask people to help you, Z.
Why can't we just cut ourselves a break? I'm not sure why. But we wouldn't do that for, you know, if our friend was saying this to us, we wouldn't demand them push through. We would give them grace, but we can't even do it for ourselves.
We can't do it for ourselves. Yeah. So have grace with you'll eventually get some remodeled kitchen or whatever the remodel is that you're looking for. You have your sanity. So I guess that's worth its weight in gold. So
it is. Not everyone can have that. A remodeled kitchen or bathroom or whatever does not get you sanity.
No. So at what point did they give you a diagnosis, a stage, your treatment plan? What were those next steps following up from your original diagnosis?
So after I got my diagnosis from just the biopsy that, yes, it's cancer, they were taking all kinds of, I think, DNA tests or whatever on the biopsy sample and preparing me for my breast cancer orientation meeting. And I met with
the one where you got lunch.
Yes. The one that I got watched. I got lunch. I watched some videos. I met, I think, three doctors. It was half a day. You got your parking pass for the Primo VIP parking. It was crazy, but it was where I met with my breast surgeon, the oncologist, and the radiology oncologist. And so they all gave me kind of like the steps. So for me and what I had and the size of my tumor and everything, mine was surgery first, then if I needed it, chemo, and then if I needed it, radiation was like my game plan. So first step was surgery. And based on the size of my tumor and that I had small breasts, they were like, they basically said a lumpectomy would leave you basically with half a breast. So it wasn't even worth it. And for me, I just figured I wouldn't trust the other one. So I decided to do a double mastectomy. And so right away I had, you know, made my decisions on the surgery and everything like that. So they kind of make it step one, here's what you're doing. And then I had to wait a month to get my surgery. So that was the hardest part, was knowing I had cancer growing in, you know, my boob for a month, and then just waiting for surgery. There's nothing I can do. I'm not getting any shots or anything to get rid of it. So it was kind of feeling like a time bomb just ticking in me while I was waiting for surgery.
Why did it take so long for surgery? Did they tell you? Was it like, sorry, we're booked up?
It sounded like that booked on that kind of like how long they needed the room for, the type of surgery. And I had talked to some other women, at least in this area, and they're like, yeah, a month is about how long I waited too.
Interesting.
Like, that's crazy. So I had surgery, went through, I had a sentinel node biopsy, which is where they like inject the radioactive dye into your nipple. And then it goes to like the closest nodes around your tumor. And mm-hmm. So they only removed two for me, and both of them were clear. So that was awesome. I only had to have two removed, and that meant I didn't have to have radiation either. So
awesome.
That was wonderful. So when I heard that, that was great. And there was one big kind of roller coaster that happened was after surgery, my breast surgeon came out and said, you know, she's node negative. That's a great sign. I'm almost positive she's not going to need chemo. And so I was like, and she said that to all my friends and family that were there waiting for me. So unfortunately, I had the oncotype test, and I was in the like way beyond the high range. I test above the high range for the likelihood of reoccurrence, and that's most likely to benefit from chemo. So they basically said, you know, it would be ridiculous for you to not do chemo. So I had to have, I had AC Taxol chemo, which is like the big dose, heavy hitter, Red Devil and all of that stuff. So I had chemo for 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And during this time, Were you able to still yogi? Like, I know you're a big street parker now.
Yeah.
Were you still able to get kind of some physical activity in, or did you just kind of just lay low and focus on treatment? And, what did your fitness look like at that time?
At that time, my fitness went pretty low. I was not doing much yoga at all. I had under the muscle reconstruction, and I did not do well with that surgery at all. There was some complications, and it just having that kind of intense surgery, it was extremely physically hard. And I just felt, my body just felt foreign. And I did mostly, all I did was walking. Like, walking was my happy place. I could go on, I've got a lot of nature trails by where I live, so that was awesome. And that just kind of became like my solace. It was something I could, if I want to get my heart going a little bit, which was really easy, I could push it. But it was, I had gotten a Fitbit tracker right at that time. So it was nice. I could kind of track my heart rate, how long I was going, and kind of get mindful of my health. But I just was depleted all the time. It was so mm-hmm. frustrating, because when I got diagnosed, I would say I was probably at the time the best health of my life, and I went to nothing.
Now, so this is going to be now a question I'm going to ask all women, since I've been exposed to this from our last podcast with Stephanie. Did mm-hmm. they, so I'm assuming, so you opted for reconstruction, having the getting implants, right, to have breast again. Did they talk about your options of not getting reconstruction and being just flat?
They had the only mention they had was in the pamphlet I got on that first day. They had like a little physical diagram with the little drawings of your options, and flat was the first one. They did have it. And then they had the like implant reconstruction and the different flap reconstructions, but it wasn't talked about. It wasn't really addressed besides that one little mention in the pamphlet.
Did you ever consider it?
I had, funny enough, before I had been diagnosed, for whatever reason, I had known people, of course, that had gone through it. And I had always said, no, I don't want to have foreign stuff in me. I would want to be pure. I want to be flat. And when it came down to it, I had thought about it. And then like, I had this thought about the goddess image. And for some reason, for me personally, I'm not saying it's, you know, any, that's the typical stereotypical should be, but that goddess imagery in typical folklore and stuff was, you know, something important to me. And so I decided to get reconstruction. Unfortunately, right after my surgery, because my tissue was so just angry, they couldn't, I had my expanders placed, but they couldn't fill them whatsoever. So I was essentially flat for, I think it was about 6 months. Yeah. It was all during chemo that I was 6 to 8 months. I was flat. So I have to say, I am glad that I had that experience. So now that I knew when I was getting my implants done that, yes, this is actually what I wanted. I was fully healed when I started, like getting the expanders inflated. It was probably, I think it was like 9 months after surgery that I finally was able to get them started to get the fills in them.
I think it's fantastic that you had some time to think about it. And at least the pamphlet showed you the option.
Yeah.
I'm like so intrigued now to see like what information is provided. And now that it's been I've had this discussion, and we have a few women in our community that have chosen to be flat. I think it's such an interesting topic, because I feel like there's a piece to our womanhood that, you know, breasts are huge to me, such a feminine, part of us, that, but also knowing that it could kill us, or that it could, yeah, it could have something so deadly inside of us, is also kind of terrifying. So,
yeah, it's something we should be able to have the option that we can do at any point. And if, you know, 3 years from now, if you decide that you were flat, you do want to have surgery and have breasts again, then that should be, you know, definitely something embraced and not look down upon or anything mm-hmm. either. And I think it's just important to embrace our body in the moment. And yeah. Who knows, with mine being under the muscle, I might get mad because eventually they might limit what I can do physically. And who knows, I might want to take them out and be flat so I can do push-ups with, you know, a car on my back. Yeah. I don't know.
With a car on my back. Woo! So when, after treat, at what point did you start challenging yourself when it came to your fitness and start identifying yourself as an athlete? And I do know that you do street parking, and I do know that you know how to snatch.
Thanks to you.
So, I was like, you can't come to Barbells for Moves and not pick up a barbell. I'm so sorry.
I was so excited. That was the best. That was the best day ever. I think I told Ian that after we left. I was like, this is the best day.
That makes me so happy.
As far as getting back to embracing my physicality, I have to admit, it took me way too long. I was just so scared. And my surgeon did tell me to wait a year after my final revision. So when I got my implants put in after my expanders, to wait a year until I could do a push-up or anything downward bearing. So I was scared to do anything physical. And
wait a minute.
Yes.
They told you to wait a year? Mm-hmm. 365 days?
Yes.
Oh, do you know that women have babies and 6 weeks later, you're like, all right, go do whatever you want.
Yeah.
A year. Yep. You guys hear this? This is this is disturbing.
Well, I love telling this story. My favorite story is when I had my first consult with my plastic surgeon, which I love my plastic surgeon. He did amazing work. He's great. But when I had my consult with him, I told him, one of my questions was, well, how long will it be until I can do a push-up again? And he looks at me, well, I don't know why you would want to. I don't know. You don't really, you won't need to after the surgery. And I'm thinking, does he think the fake boobs he's giving me is going to be good enough? I'll look good enough. I don't need to do but it's for my, I was so confused. He meant push-up bra. He meant I couldn't do he thought I was asking about a push-up bra, but I was like, no, push-up, physical. And he's like, oh, a year. I'm like, wait, a year? After my final surgery, not the first one? Yeah. So I cheated a little bit. I did cheat a little bit.
I won't tell anybody.
Yeah. They look fine now. They're totally fine. We're okay. But I was so afraid, and I was just afraid of what I could do. And I waited way too long, and I was starting to get back into more yoga and stuff like that more. Probably it was probably 4 or 5 months after I had finished chemo. It was a while. And that's when I had met Sandra, actually, and there was an event Sandra was hosting that was a CrossFit for Survivors class, and it was amazing. I had so much fun. I did not think fitness and working out could be fun. I had only known it as here, do 10 sets of 25 bicep curls, and that was it. I didn't know you could do something fun. And so mm-hmm. that was that first class, and she made it so simple and just made it approachable. And there was other CrossFit type coaches there that were doing the stuff with us and coaching, helping us. And it was amazing for me. And I was just so excited. And after that, I went home and I got my little PVC pipe, showed us. And I got a little jump rope and a 5 pound kettlebell. And I started doing the same exact workouts that she had done at that event. And then I started following street parking and doing some of their free stuff. And slowly down the rabbit hole, I fell. And I've been
slowly.
Yeah, slowly. But it was about 6 months. I've been a street parking member for about 6 months. So I'd say it's 7 months that I got into it slowly. And it was just only recently that I felt like, I am an athlete. Wait a minute. I can say this. Mm-hmm. That is me. I don't have to have an athlete's figure. I don't have to have where I'm working out 5 hours a day. That I can be an athlete for what mm-hmm. I do. So it was a crazy change of mindset.
Yeah, 100%. I even remember you coming in a little timid, almost like you kind of reminded me of like my 3 month marker in CrossFit, which was over 10 years ago, over 13 years ago, of how timid I was, because I just don't think, especially when you said earlier that you just weren't kind of into sports growing up. I mean, I was exposed to sports. I was one of 10 kids. And so by the time it got to me, it was like, oh, there's no money left in the bucket for you to do sports this year. So you can be the water girl kind of sports family, you know? And so I was exposed to it. My dad was a basketball coach. So, but I do know that I've always been intimidated at gyms. Like, I just always felt like I never belonged. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. It's always been a very uncomfortable place for me. And there is this timidness to a CrossFit gym that I had. I mean, when I mm-hmm. first walked into a gym, I was like, what do you want me to do? Like, you're crazy.
I thought it was all tire flipping and running till you throw up, and I was not about to be interested in that.
when I started in 2007, that's exactly what it was. They've definitely softened the punch, in the last 13 years. No, but it was still very, even though the movements were really intimidating for me, the mm-hmm. people were very welcoming, and the community was very like helpful and like, oh no. Like, we all started where like we're all scared. like come join us. And then what I think CrossFit has done, and you know, functional fitness or even weightlifting has done for me, is you go into a situation and you don't think you can do it, and then you do it and you leave a better person because you like build confidence that you didn't even know you needed in yourself. And that's what, you know, like when someone is like, okay, you can snatch that. And you're like, no, I can't. Like, even I was teaching you on a barbell, I'm like, you can do this. Like, and you're like, and I'm like, literally, you guys, Miranda is a natural weightlifter. The woman needs to start just training weightlifting, go and compete. She has beautiful awareness of her body. She, like, from a technical perspective, she hit the counts. Like, I showed it to her. She, like, I'm not an athlete. Bull S. You're an athlete. Right away, I was like, and you, yep, that's it. Like, she got it after I showed her like 3 times. I was like, and we're done. Okay, let's go eat.
I love that. I felt like such a like an awkward Gumby. But like, you were like, you know, all those little tweaks. I'm like, oh yeah, just tweak. Tell me those little tweaks mm-hmm. verbally and I can just nail that. So
yep,
I still felt like
awesome.
An awkward Gumby, but
no.
It was fun.
I almost like, on the day that we post your podcasting, I'm going to also post the videos of you snatching, because it was so beautiful. I was like, and she did it. There we go. It's time for wine. That's a wrap. Let's go get some wine. So now you're heavy street parker. I see you and Sandra and your guys' Zoom calls, and you guys got a whole team of women out in Michigan that get together and do workouts all the time. Let's talk through like kind of how that's kind of where you're at today in that, where you feel like as a breast cancer survivor, where you're at in that like recovery piece to all of your surgeries. Like, have you felt like it's held you back from any specific movements or anything you've wanted to do when it comes to your street parking training?
I feel definitely overhead movements and anything upper body. I still struggle with, I'm still doing a lot of knee push-ups, but like, I have to remind myself from where I started, which was doing wall push-ups. I started wall push-ups, and then I started like elevated a little bit. And then now I'm on knee push-ups and I can do those, but they make me angry.
I think you should try putting on a push-up bra. Maybe that will help.
I know. Maybe that'll help my skills, right? I don't have the right bra. That's the problem.
It's the push-up bra. You need that.
So, and then, yeah, just anything overhead type movement. And the weirdest thing I've noticed post-surgery is I have an extremely hard time, like, just activating my lat muscles. I used to, pre all of this, when I was doing yoga, that was a muscle, like, I was really proud I could flex. And it takes an insane amount of, like, focus. I have to look in the mirror. It's very frustrating. So it's kind of like learning just how to move your muscles all over again. It's definitely strange. I remember when I was doing physical therapy after my mastectomy originally, one of the moves was I had to like pinch my shoulder blades together. So it was just kind of like that shrugging type motion. And I could not do it, even with like her putting her hand on my back and trying to show me where to flex. I could not get those muscles to move. And it was terrifying. It was so scary.
Wow. So now you're, how long have you been out of treatment?
I will be, it'll be 2 years in October that I'll be done with chemo.
So I want everyone to hear that 2 years later and still struggling with overhead position and engagement of muscles. So if you're having those issues, you're not alone. This is normal. Don't think that you're some freak show. And if you're listening in, like going overhead after really aggressive surgery to your upper body, to something that has been, that is used to feed little children, our boobs, that's what they're meant for. If anybody didn't know, that's kind of what they, the purpose of them. but once you have to remove something so fragile and so important in a woman's body and have to almost just kind of duplicate them and with a foreign, you know, a foreign effect, that recovery takes a very, very long time. And the fact that there's not more information and not more protocols post mastectomy on how to get us stronger, which we are working on. Gosh darn it. Gosh darn it.
Oh, it is very frustrating. Or they just, it's almost like a lot of times it's a non-issue. Like, oh, well, you can lift up a gallon of milk, right? And sometimes you can't, though. That's the thing. You need two hands to do it. Mm-hmm. It's not normal. And I have to say, my physical therapy experience was pretty much a check the boxes and you're good. And then I was looking around the internet trying to find, are there YouTube videos I can find? Like, what's approachable? Everything was either like, oh, way, way overly simplified, like below where I was at, or
yeah, because you're like, I'm an athlete. What do I? You need a YouTube video for an athlete? This is ridiculous. Not a grandma.
I just had cancer and had my boobs chopped off, but I'm still an athlete here. Or it was like way over the top and unapproachable.
Well, I think that from what I've heard, a lot of women don't even get prescribed PT post mastectomy. It's not protocol. No. So you're very fortunate to get even the box checked. So bravo, yes. Healthcare system for Miranda's.
I think it was thankfully PT my plastic surgeon was great. That was just like one of his boxes he checked. He's like, okay, I did your reconstruction surgery and next you see the PT. And she was in his office. So it was nice. I didn't have to go anywhere different.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a start. Yeah. It was a start. Yeah. It helps me know where to start at least.
All right. Here is the biggest question of them all. Dun, dun, dun. You ready?
Drum sure. roll.
What has been your biggest lesson from breast cancer?
I think the biggest one would be just looking for gratitude in the little things. Gratitude in the beauty in little things. I just started to appreciate sunrises were basically the highlight of every single day. I got excited for sunrises. I'm a morning person, so that was my thing. And just the smell of coffee when you first make it in the morning, just dialing in. It was kind of my own mini meditations in a way. My nature walks were a really big deal to me, where I would just, even if it was my own neighborhood, just pay attention to, you know, the new flowers that were blooming, or you know, just silly, like the silly things probably children notice, I guess. But that's what I kind of dialed
into.
Like,
you sound like my son.
Yeah. But it just that simple stuff, like it must have just cleared my head. And that was just paying attention to those little things. Because there's a whole lot of crap going on. So the little things I could just kind of dial into.
I think that they're good reminders that you're alive. And I think that we all take that each breath that we take really for granted that, hey, every time you take a breath, it's a gift kind of thing. Wow. That's good. That's a good one. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
No, I don't think so.
Dig deep.
I know
you know, you're good. You spit it all out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, guess what? We have this podcast forever and you can always come back and women have, and we can come back and talk about your relationship in February. We'll do a Valentine's series. The Valentine's dreams, we'll call it.
There you go.
Yes. So I know you're on social media. Where can all of our listeners find you? I know you're on Instagram. Let's give them your Instagram handle.
Yeah, it's Coffee, Carbs, and Courage, all spelled out.
There you go. We should have just started the podcast with that. I knew everyone was going to love it. Coffee, Carbs, and Courage. Love it.
Yep.
I think you have the best Instagram handle out there. Well, Miranda, thank you so much for sharing your story with our community and for coming in and so bravely picking up a barbell with me a few months ago when we probably should have been social distancing.
We didn't even know yet.
Yeah, I had no idea what the future, what the next 3 months were going to embark. We were embarking on. So crazy. It feels like a lifetime ago. I want to thank our team behind the scenes that no one sees that's here listening in. Keisha, and we have Ryan. Boop, 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 boop. Thank you for tuning in to hear these valuable stories of our community at Barbells for Boobs. Remember, everyone, have some gratitude for the little things. The sunrises, the rainfall, the dog licking your face, the sun farting in your face, which my son loves to do. So I'm going to start appreciating these things, Miranda. Thank you.
Happy to
and
help.
That's lights out. Yes, yes. Thank you. And that's lights out for the Behind the Bra podcast. Thank you again, Miranda.